This is Desiree, one of the hosts of Q Transmissions, and we're speaking today with Dr. P.Z. Myers, the science-blogging, cephalopod-loving, evidence-seeking biology professor and outspoken atheist. We'll be in town next week for a debate about the existence of God. Thanks very much for being with us, P.Z.
Glad to be here.
So you're best known for your blog, Pharyngula. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Oh, it's just a little personal exercise in self-expression is the way I think of it. It's been around for a few years. It seems to have become fairly popular.
Well, why did you start it in the first place?
Well, I live in Morris, Minnesota, which is not the most exciting place to live. We're way out here in the prairies of, you know, sort of in between Minnesota and the Dakotas. And sometimes you need something to do, and it was a good way to get out there and think and write and make connections with like-minded people and have some discussions.
It has become a bit of a clearinghouse for religious and atheist information. Was that a natural evolution, or is that what you wanted
well,
it to
yes,
go?
Well, yes, because you know, one of the things that got me most upset that I would often write about is creationism, that the, you know, the struggle between evolution and creationism. And that is ultimately a religiously motivated argument. And I pin the blame entirely on religion for this little problem. If we didn't have religion, we wouldn't have people believing in silly things like that the Earth is 6,000 years old. And we're sticking to that belief in contradiction to all the evidence without any hint that they're going to give up.
How did you become an atheist in the first place? Like, was it proactive or was it reactive?
Well, it was... Oh... Every once in a while, I put up something on the blog where people can tell us about their conversion stories, and those are very popular, and they're very different for everyone. And lots of people have very traumatic sorts of conversion stories, and I didn't. I just sort of evolved out of religion as a young teenager, and what I most pin my atheism on is that I was a Lutheran and I took confirmation courses. They made us actually sit down and read the Bible. And I realized it was a load of hooey. So, it was actually an intellectual decision that these were not a set of beliefs that I could legitimately hold.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's more and more atheists every year. It seems like it may be in response to something.
I think it's in response to the fact that a number of atheists are being outspoken about it. A lot of people... No, I see this in my own family, that for instance, my father would never have called himself an atheist, but when I think back on his attitudes and opinions now, he was an atheist. He did not believe in anything like organized religion or anything else. But at the same time, there's this horrible stigma to being an atheist, that back in the 50s and 60s, it was all associated with communism and horrible things like that. And so just to say that you're an atheist was shocking. It was breaking a taboo. And I think right now that people are realizing that no, it's not. It's no big deal. Just to say I don't believe in God is rational and harmless. And so more and more people are just shaking off that old deference to belief that they used to have.
So you say there's more outspoken atheists, but it also seems like there's more outspoken fundamentalism on the religious side as well.
I think that was another factor. I mean, especially in the United States, where we have been suffering with the religious right for so many years. And, it's not just the atheist setting an example of speaking out, but it's a lot of people getting really fed up with the absurdities that are being pushed on this country. You know, when you hear a few of these televangelists preaching on about the apocalypse and so forth... It's not hard to realize that this is total nonsense, that these guys have no grounds for believing this. And if you're at all rationally inclined, you'll find yourself driven away from religion.
Well, do you think it's actually getting worse? Because it appears that way. I'm just wondering if that's how it's presented in the media. And especially on your blog, it seems like, honestly, every 12 seconds there's something else that's happening somewhere.
Oh, yeah. That's only a fraction of what's going on that appears on my blog. But, there are many people who will say that what's happening is this sort of polarization, that the rift is widening, that people are getting louder on both sides of the issue. And I actually think that's a good thing. That just sitting quietly and tolerating it is what's allowed a lot of nonsense to build up. And I think what's happening is that atheists and agnostics, deists, you know, free thinkers of all sorts are speaking up more, and they're coming on strong. And I think the far religious right is terrified that they are becoming more and more strident because they see what's facing them, which is progressive marginalization. And so they're basically shrieking for their survival right now. And that's why you get this perception that it's worse, is because people are speaking out more about it.
There's this ongoing conversation on your blog about the concept of framing. And, you know, basically about the best way to publicly promote atheism or secularism. So what's your opinion on that?
Oh, yes, the framing wars.
Mm-hmm.
There's a school of thought that says that the way that we can best promote atheism is by getting along with believers of all sorts. That what we do is we try to minimize the differences so that everything gets smoothed over and there's no problems. We're all nice and diplomatic and everything, and we don't point out the absurdities in each other's beliefs. And that's the framing position. And the non-framers are like me, who say, no, that what we've got to do is highlight the differences. That what is an intellectually responsible way to handle this issue is to make the differences the focus of our discussion and hammer them out. We ought to be fighting over these things, you know, not physically, of course, but, you know, in debate and argument. We ought to be discussing these things, and hiding the differences is not a way to resolve them.
Well, this kind of brings us to the concept of militant atheism, and you've been called a militant atheist.
Yes.
So what does that mean, first of all?
Oh, it means they don't like us.
Okay.
No, that's really... Militant atheists, it's a real non sequitur, because look at the people who are most prominently considered militant atheists, people like Hitchens, Dennett, and Dawkins, mm-hmm. of course. And what do? They write books. I write on a blog. When I think of militancy, I think of people marching in the streets, and I think of revolution, and I think of people, you know, physically fighting, but they're not doing any of this. That what we are about is argument. We're about discussing, and some people are so caught up in protecting their religious beliefs that they consider just a protestation or a dissent from their views is considered militancy.
Mm.
And it's really kind of absurd, but I sometimes go with it and pretend to be militant, but everyone knows I'm really a big teddy bear and it's no problem.
So you wouldn't classify yourself as a militant atheist?
Only as a joke.
Okay.
although in a sense, you know, that all of us are militant atheists, because all it takes is expressing your views to become labeled as a militant atheist. It's just using that particular adjective to the point where it's worn down and useless.
Well, how about the fracking cracker incident, which I'm not tired of the story at all. could you explain to our audience?
Yes, by abuse of a Catholic cracker, yes. That really wasn't an anti-religion argument at all that I was making. And a lot of people confuse it that way. What happened is that a student was practically assaulted because he appropriated a communion wafer at a Catholic church service.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he was there to protest the fact that they were using university money to host Catholic mass in the student union. So anyway, he took this cracker and he left with it, which is where it should have just sort of died. You know, that's a trivial offense. But people like Bill Donahue of the Catholic Anti-Defamation League got all upset about this and made it a major issue and started shrieking that this student needs to be expelled. He needs to be kicked out of the university for this. And as an academic and a professor and somebody who happens to like those students, I rather took offense at this. And so I said, no, I'll take the heat. I'm willing to get out there and do exactly the same thing. And Bill Donahue can rant at me, and I've got tenure. I'm safe. I'm not worried about it. So it was really a protest against the encroachment of religious belief on secular life.
Mm-hmm.
That Catholics should not be able to say that a student who commits what they consider blasphemy or heresy should be expelled. This is a pluralistic society. You just can't do that. You know, on the other hand, I would say that the Catholics have every right to have their own superstitions and to practice their mass and have their religious beliefs and build churches and so forth. That's nothing I'm going to interfere with. But when they try to say that other people have to respect those beliefs, then I think it's time for people to stand up and say no. That there's a line that has to be drawn here.
So what was your response to the outcry for his to have this boy expelled?
Well, my response was to draw off some of the heat and say, I will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Send me a cracker. And I will desecrate it publicly and I'll post it on the blog. And boy, people were very obliging. I got a whole bunch of these things. They just mailed up to me. And so then I took one and... Now, this is my dilemma. I did not want to make a huge deal out of this because I didn't want to give this cracker any particular weight. So all I did was stick a nail at it because that's the traditional way of desecrating wafers.
And vampires.
And threw it in garbage.
So I had also heard that there was also a page out of the Quran and...
Oh, yes. Well, you know, in the lead up to this,
mm-hmm.
I posted this on the blog and said I was going to do it. And in the lead-up to this, a whole bunch of people were very upset, and they wrote to me, and the most bizarre comment they made, this was very consistent, like half the email I got said this, they said, you would never do this to the Quran because the Muslims would chop your head off. And often they'd follow up and say, well, I've notified the Muslims that they should come chop your head off. So it was very bizarre and very hypocritical. So I said, of course, sure, I'm not worried about that. And one of these Catholics even sent me a Koran and double dog dared me to desecrate it. So,
and that's a big thing.
Yeah. So I did it. I threw it in the trash with the cracker, and I also did it with a copy of The God Delusion because people wanted to make it sound like I was picking on any religion.
Well, a lot of people consider Dawkins a religion. So.
Yeah, they're kind of wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was a little bit of a mocking reference to the reference that people are holding these things when they shouldn't. They're just books. They're just pieces of bread. If you want to have deep beliefs about them, go ahead. But these little trappings, you know, these little trivial things should not be elevated above a person's life or a person's career or a person's education.
Well, on the career point, what kind of fallout was there for you personally from that?
Next to none, except that the mail got kind of heavy. people were calling the university to have me fired, and they were writing me all kinds of nasty emails. I got so many death threats. People were threatening to poison me, shoot me, kill me. They were going to nail me to crosses. They were going to chop off my head. It was so over the top that it became kind of comical.
I guess on that point, how much fallout has there been for you in total just from being an outspoken atheist? Like, for example, you didn't get to go see Expelled on the big night. That must have been a blow.
That was a privilege to be able to be kicked out of that horrible movie. I can't really say that there's been much in the way of negative consequences to me. I think being extremely outspoken insulates you. You know, it's not like I'm a quiet little guy who has said one or two things that might irritate somebody. Everybody knows I'm out there on this issue, and so it's kind of taken for granted. I think that sort of sets you apart and means that they're going to leave you alone a little more.
Hmm. Considering the death threats and the large-scale religious fundamentalism in the U.S., what is it like to have a debate about the existence of God or any religious topic?
Well, we've had a few of them, and you know, usually they're fairly civil affairs, and there's not really any problem. A debate is structured so that people are going to show up expecting to hear you talk about the issues. they don't expect you to pull out a knife and go after anyone. So it's okay. It's a very civilized sort of event. The main issue I have with it is that the people on the other side usually have such stupid arguments. They get kind of boring.
Oh, are there certain arguments that they seem to use over and over again?
Well, the most common are usually the arguments from authority that we have to pay attention to the Bible, that the Bible is the source of all information. They will sometimes devolve into defenses of biblical authority, which is it's really boring to me. I don't think this particular one will go in that direction. I think the one up there we're going to be talking about the design argument,
mm-hmm.
and arguing over whether there is evidence for the intervention of some kind of creator or designer in the history of life on Earth. And that will be a little bit more interesting, but I don't expect that Kirk Kirsten will say anything particularly provocative or interesting.
Well, is there sort of a main argument to the intelligent design viewpoint?
A main argument? Mm-hmm. Ooh, I wish. I wish there was something specifically to grapple with. No, they throw out lots of stuff. Irreducible complexity is a barrier to the evolution of complex structures, which is pretty much nonsense. They argue that life is too complex to have simply evolved by random chance, when evolution is a little bit more than random chance, and complexity is a natural consequence of random events anyway. Those are the main kinds of things they do. Mainly, though, what intelligent design's purpose is to cast doubt. They don't have a positive argument of their own. All they want to do is cast doubt on evolutionary theory, make people question it in rather bogus and illegitimate ways.
Is there actually any science at all to back up the concept of intelligent design?
None at all. Not one shred. Charles Darwin came up with this idea 150 years ago, and he did it without genetics and without molecular biology. And even without those huge tools at his disposal, he came up with all this evidence that supports the idea of evolutionary theory. And that evidence is being reinforced. And ever since, we've got all these new ideas. We've got, looking at molecular sequences, for instance, reaffirms everything that Charles Darwin ever said. It does it in a way that he couldn't even imagine. And the whole idea that creationism is having a comeback, that intelligent design has any credibility, is total nonsense at this point. There's no basis for that.
But there are scientists who definitely promote the fact that they have found something to support their claims.
In intelligent design?
Mm-hmm.
Well, name some.
I haven't been listening to their arguments. But they do the lecture circuit, and they come out to debates like this, and they put up their PowerPoint presentations, and they use their little laser pointers.
Yes, they have all the trappings of mm-hmm. scientific lecture. But they have none of the substance.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually very few scientists who have done this sort of thing. There's Michael Behe, of course. Everyone mentions him. And his arguments have been refuted so many times that we're really getting a little tired of him. He's like this comical pest who just won't go away, even though you've swatted at him so many times. But as for other legitimate scientists, there's very few of them. Mainly, these are religious people who are putting up these intelligent design ideas as a facade to cover up the fundamentally religious nature of their argument.
This brings us to, is it possible to be a scientist and to reconcile, I guess, a belief in religion or God?
Oh, it's possible to do all kinds of things. It's possible to be a scientist and to be a clown in your spare time, too. So that it's not as if human beings are monoliths who can't hold mutually incompatible ideas. We do that all the time. There are lots of good scientists who are also religious. But what they do is they leave religion behind when they step in the lab door. The private best known in this country is Ken Miller, who's a Catholic. He fervently believes, and I seriously believe he's sincere in his belief. But he's also a good scientist. But you know, if you talk to him, you'll find that he's just saying that they're compatible in the sense that human beings can hold these beliefs together. He's not saying that they're compatible in the sense that you have to be a practicing Catholic in the laboratory. You don't. And it would actually get in the way if you were doing things like thinking that godly intervention would change the results of your experiment.
Have you personally ever been presented with anything that made you think maybe there's something to this God thing?
No. you know, that what kind of thing could that be? You know,
and I guess that's my question. What kind of evidence would you have to be presented with to believe in God?
It would have to be, you know, it could not be something like a mere personal experience, because I have had hallucinations. I have, for instance, been in a hospital and treated with drugs and had very bizarre perceptions going on around me. And so a personal experience is not relevant. What it would have to be is a consistent phenomenon where many people of different faiths with different biases, so atheists and religious, could record something, measure something, report out something, analyze it in similar ways, and see a result that indicated the existence of a deity.
So if you did suddenly, you met God on the street, you would assume you were having a delusion.
Well, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
I mean, what would this God look like? Would he be white-bearded and wearing a toga or something?
But many people, you know, that is their rationale for their belief. I know he's there. Just that sense of certainty without any evidence.
Human perception is easily led astray. That there are all kinds of sensations that we can have that are false. That's what our brains do, is they generate, you know, models of the world around us. And it's easy for us to be confused in that sort of way. And the whole point of doing real science is that you try to get away from that. That you try to find independent measures that allow you to observe and measure a phenomenon that's going on. So I could be convinced of the existence of God if, for instance, I'm trying to think of a specific example. You know, if a lot of us recorded, you know, specific perturbations, if we were sitting there and we discovered that, you know, if somebody prayed for a particular event to happen, it would change a physical measurement that we could make in a consistent way.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's ever seen anything like that, of course. But I think the hallmark of a good scientific observation would be that business of reproducibility and consensus and having many people able to repeat the experiment over and over again. If somebody did something like that, then maybe I'd sit down and say, well, there is some phenomenon out there. Maybe that phenomenon did have some effect on the universe in predictable ways. Then we could start looking for it.
Hi, this is Heather, one of the hosts of Q Transmissions. On the next show, we're going to be speaking with Nathan Hinman. Yes, that Nathan. About leaving your religion. What happens when you no longer want to be part of the religious tradition you grew up in? Is the freedom worth the potential pain of leaving all that behind? Join us Friday at 6 o'clock to find out the answer to these and other questions on CJSR 88.5 FM or live on the interwebs at cjsr.com.
This is Desiree, one of the hosts of Q Transmissions, and we're speaking today with Dr. P.Z. Myers. Are these debates more fun or more frustrating, really? Because you seem to have a lot of fun with this.
Well, yeah, of course. That the way I see the debate is that there's going to be me and there's going to be this one other person up there, and we're going to harangue at each other for a little while. And that won't be so interesting, but what will be much more interesting is what people say afterwards. And I have a lot of fun hearing the discussion afterwards. And you know, people come up and tell me where my arguments were weak and where they were strong and where the other guy was weak and strong. And we'll all learn something from it.
Has it ever got really nasty?
I have had experiences with, you know, one-on-one discussions where it's gotten kind of nasty, where people have gotten very upset with me. But in a public forum like this, no, I don't expect that it will get nasty. I've just scared everyone away. Nobody's going to come.
I was just thinking, are you sure you want to say that?
They're hoping for a good wrestling match. It won't happen.
I'm wondering what you thought about the Freedom from Religion Foundation, that sign over the Christmas holidays. And I'm going to paraphrase here. It's the religion hardens hearts and enslaves minds.
Oh, I thought that was great. In your face. I like it. this gets to what we were talking about earlier, that are you going to try and smooth over the differences, or are you going to highlight them? And I think the Freedom for Religion Foundation did a great job of putting it right out there, that here's the difference between atheists and religious people, that atheists don't believe in God, and they also think that religion is a bad thing. Let's not hide that fact. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that religion is a good thing, or we would be practicing it ourselves. And so they brought it right out in the open, and people were arguing about it. It became a topic of national conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's the really great thing about it.
Well, do you think things like that attract people to atheism, or at least make them question their beliefs? Do you think it does that, or do you think it more gives people who are already thinking in that direction hope that other people are thinking like that as well?
A little bit of both. But, you know, there's another factor that has to be taken into account here, and I think it's that what people see when they see atheists speaking out strongly like that is they see that atheists are confident and strong. They're not wishy-washy. They're not hiding their beliefs. That this also makes atheism attractive, because what it then represents is a group of strong-minded people who are willing to stand up for their beliefs. And people like that as well. Nobody likes a milquetoast, right? You want people who's confident and brash and bold. Maybe it'd be a little wearing all the time, but those are the people you want to be your leaders.
Well, on that note, do you ever think that at any point you've gone too far?
No, I haven't gone far enough.
Oh, looking forward
to
that.
Well, I mean, how would I go too far? I mean,
well, yeah, what would you consider too far?
Well, you know, the terms of the argument are always intellectual and open discussion. I would think it would be going too far if it did break down into physical violence. That's too far. But I have never proposed physical violence, never will. And so it's something that I can't even imagine doing.
It seems like maybe your detractors don't share that sentiment.
Oh, my detractors sometimes say these amazing things that I just can't believe it. I ran across one blog post a while ago who flat out said that P.Z. Myers has this plan to put all the religious people on trains and ship them to an extermination camp.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Well, it was a pretty much a no-name blog of no consequence, but you know, every once in a while you stumble across these little things, and they're just so far divorced from reality that it's hard to take them seriously. I mean, my mother goes to church. I really have no plans to send her to a camp. It's fine with me. My little sister teaches Sunday school. These are human beings, and nothing I am ever going to do is going to involve dehumanizing people. It's criticizing ideas.
What does it feel like to be on the receiving end of this kind of hatred from a lot of religious people?
Well, it's slightly unreal. This is the internet, you know, and I have this idea that there are a lot of people out there who are sitting in their basements, hiding behind their screens, and with that kind of anonymity, they feel free to say the most outrageous, most vile things. And so most of the threats I get, I cannot take for real. These are blowhards mouthing off. And so in that sense, it's kind of annoying, but at the same time, I don't feel any serious threat. When people start saying specific things, when they say, you know, I'm going to kill you in such and such a way, on such and such mm-hmm. a date, then I stop and I say, you know, it would be foolish not to take this into account. And I don't watch myself on that day. So if people get specific, then it's grounds for concern. Mm-hmm. And there have been a few people who've sent things like this, and I've actually dealt with them by, I take these letters down to my local police station, and I tell them, okay, don't panic, I'm not panicked. But here, just on for reference, mm-hmm. you know, if this person comes into town and you catch one a speeding ticket or something, you might want to have a talk with them. It's at that level where, yeah, we do the simple basic things. We don't take all of them for granted, but most of them, yeah, we ignore.
What you're doing is promoting your belief. So how do you think there's a difference between atheists talking about how they don't believe in God and religious people talking about how they do believe in God? Like, do you think it should be as protected as...
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, that, I'm all about free speech, and I'm not interested in silencing religious people or atheists. That shouldn't even be considered. So there's no difference in principle. However, there is, of course, a difference in practice, which is that we are in a state that is a religious majority. They've got all the power. So there is this practical difference that we have to be aware of, is that atheists need to screech a little louder to get their way. Most of the Christians I hear complaining, it's sad and pathetic that they're whining about the fact that atheists have said there is no God when Christians have all the power and they can do things like get elected to office, and mm-hmm. they'll even openly say things like that they will not vote for an atheist for a political office. Who's being oppressed here? It's certainly not the Christians.
Well, that's interesting, because I do think there's definitely a difference in the way the groups are treated. And a while ago, actually, the University Agnostics and Atheists group, they had their banner vandalized.
Oh, yes.
What happened with that is there was no real investigation done. Like, they wrote Jesus Loves You on the banner, and they cut off the bottom with the website address. But, again, there was no investigation, and the conversation really was... It basically degenerated into, is this a hate crime or not? Uh-huh. So would you consider something like that a hate crime?
Yes, of course. You know, if an atheist did that to a religious banner, wouldn't you think that that was a matter of hate? You know, when people burn down churches, that's definitely a hate crime. So I think vandalism and destruction of property, when it's motivated by differences in religious belief, no matter which side of the issue you are on, it is a hate crime. It's something where they're trying to suppress a point of view, trying to harm people who have particular ideas.
Well, actually, it was interesting because two religious groups on campus contacted the group afterwards, and one of the groups was, you know, very, very supportive and saying, that's horrible, we completely denounce that. And then the other group said, you know, buck up, it happens all the time, chill out, let it go.
Oh, really?
And so I find that interesting, because I don't think that would have been the reaction if it would have been their banner.
No, it wouldn't.
There was quite a bit of controversy. The president of the UAAA, people were bashing him for using the word hate crime. And actually, there was quite a bit of division within the group itself, from what I hear.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I think, again, this goes back to the framing conversation. Some people don't want to use harsh language, and they think they're going to be divisive if they use that kind of language. And then you have the other group who thinks, you know, it's about time for us to be louder than we have been.
Yes. And put me in that last group.
Yes. Let's move on to politics just a little bit. During the American election, Ferengula was absolutely chock full of political stories. And there are definitely those who say that public atheist and skeptical forums should stay away from politics altogether. So, what would you say to them?
Isn't that disgraceful? would we say that to anybody else? Would we say, for instance, that, oh, Jews, they ought to stay away from politics? So it's bad news when the Jews get involved and do things like support Israel or whatever. But we feel like we can say that about atheists, and I don't think that's right. That, atheists have to be regarded as a group of people who have their own interests and their own goals, and they have every right to speak out and endorse candidates, to endorse positions in support of those goals.
So you do think it's possible to have a political conversation and still be objective? Let's look at it from a skeptical viewpoint. Is it possible to even talk about politics and be objective?
I would think so. That when you're dealing with politics and you're dealing with issues, that often with issues you can find specific rational positions that should be endorsed. One good example in this country is this whole abstinence-only education, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
That's a political issue, right? It's also a social and ethical issue. But what an atheist can do is point out the facts that, you know, we've got the statistics. We can look at this and we can ask, okay, does it work? And the answer is no, it doesn't. And so on that basis alone, we ought to be able to say, you know, in purely objective terms, abstinence-only education is a failure. We ought not to be supporting candidates who think this is the proper way to carry out sex education. And we could make it a political issue on that basis. And lots of things could be handled that particular way.
Like the science debate 2008 questionnaire that the candidates were given.
Right.
That was very clear. That was very, how do the candidates feel about these different science issues? And as an atheist, I think we all tend to be a little bit more interested in science than the rest of the population.
Yes. We're reality-based, so it's kind of like, we like candidates who support reality.
It's a lovely way to put it. Do you have an opinion on what's going on in Gaza right now? I know that's a very controversial point for a lot
yes.
of people, especially in the States.
It's one of those things where I have read some of the news reports, I followed it a little bit, and I just can't continue. I'm so disgusted with both sides in this. That both sides have resorted to violence, and I'm kind of a pacifist here, and so I think they've both thrown away the moral high ground. That terrorism in all of its forms is unforgivable, which means organizations like Hamas are never going to get my support. But then for Israel to turn around and do things like indiscriminately shell into neighborhoods and just murder civilians puts them beyond the pale as well. So it's a hideous, ugly situation, and nobody knows what to do about it. I have no idea what to do about this horrible situation in the Middle East.
Well, do you think the U.S. is pretty much 100% support of Israel in the situation?
That's a problem, though. I mean, you should never be 100% in support of anything. That what we should be saying we support you conditionally. We support you, you know, we support your right to autonomy, and support your right to existence, but there are certain boundaries which should not be crossed. And murdering people is one of them. Torturing people is another one of them. I know the United States has done some of that ourselves, and so we should be rightly ashamed of ourselves. But you can't just say, well, we will support you no matter what, and you can do anything, and you'll still have our backing, because that puts us in the situation where we are now.
Do you think there is that full-fledged support because of the Bible and what religious fundamentalists are told about Israel?
Yeah, that's kind of a twisted thing, actually. I mean, you know, look at people like this Reverend Hagee, who supports Israel unconditionally as well.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look closely at what he's saying is he supports Israel because it's part of biblical prophecy.
Exactly.
That they will be exterminated and the surviving Jews will convert to Christianity.
Creepy.
Yes, extremely creepy.
It seems like that Christians within the U.S., they seem to feel like they have a vested interest in this conflict.
Some of them do, yes. There is this reverence towards the Holy Land.
Mm-hmm.
that automatically gets their support, and it's a support born out of ignorance. You know, they really think of Israel as this place that's described in the Bible, but of course it's nothing like that. It's that's not what Israel is at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, it gets us in trouble. Ignorance always gets us in trouble. When you're building a policy towards a foreign nation on the basis of a book that was written 4,000 years ago, you got trouble.
Okay. What's the most fun you've had with your fame or infamy? I don't know.
The most fun?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh. And I really don't think of myself as that famous, but...
Within the atheist community, you're up there.
Yes. Well, one little incident that I thought was kind of amusing and in an embarrassing sort of way is a while back I was walking down the street in one of our big American cities with a group of people who are much more famous than I am, who are really well known in their scholarly fields. And we're walking along, and twice on our walk, strangers come charging up the group, and they recognize me and ask for my autograph.
That's a good feeling. You do good work.
Well, but of course, you know, at the same time, I want to say, wait a minute, who I'm with?
Can I ask who you were with?
Well, one, you mean, you know, Janet Brown?
Am I a bad person if I say no?
No. Well, like I said, these are people who are rightly very well known in their fields. These are real scholars who are very well known. Janet Brown is the author of the best biography of Darwin ever.
Oh, that Janet Brown.
That Janet.
Gotcha.
Brown. Yes. So.
But does she have a blog with Squid?
No, she doesn't. That's it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that was kind of flattering in a sense, but also mm-hmm. kind of. I felt like the world was somewhat out of joint here. That we need to do something to correct these people's ignorance of who's really important in this world. But,
well, the fact that you're getting a lot of information out to people who probably wouldn't have access to that information, at least not all in one place.
I hope so.
That's a valuable service.
I think what I'm disseminating is a couple of things, and one is information. Here's how to deal with creationism. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing I'm spreading out there is attitude. And I think that actually resonates more with a lot of people, is that they're realizing that this is an attitude that's viable, and maybe they ought to adopt it too.
So are you going to be at the amazing meeting this year?
I don't know. I haven't had an invitation yet. We'll see.
Well, there's nothing up on the site. I've been checking religiously,
yeah.
One would say.
Yeah, you know, if I get invited, yeah, I'll jump at it. But we'll see.
Well, you went last year.
Yes.
It was great.
It's a great meeting.
So
everyone ought to go.
Well, give our listeners sort of an idea of what they could expect if they went.
Oh, the amazing meeting is it's different. You know, if you go to atheist meetings, what you find is a bunch of people talking about atheism. But the amazing meeting is one of these things where there's a lot of atheists, of course. But the main thing is sort of excitement about science and skepticism. That these are people who are really interested in promoting positive ideas about how the world works. And so what you find is you find scientists, you find media personalities, you find all kinds of interesting people who just want to talk about great stuff. And it's one of the most infectiously enthusiastic meetings I've ever been to. So it's great.
I've already bought my plane ticket, so I am a bit early. But
well, good for you.
I do hope, and I assume they will ask you to speak. So that's lovely.
We'll see. I don't know, you know, Phil Plate is running the show now,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he and I just have this thing. So,
what thing?
Oh, we have a rivalry.
A rivalry?
Yes, of course. I mean, it's kind of silly because he's so far beneath me.
Just so you know, one of the listeners to this show is. We're thinking he's going to end up a Phil Plate stalker, really. So.
Oh, so there's where I have to really worry about when I show up, huh? Yeah. No, it's an entirely friendly rivalry, and we tend to put each other down in a mutual way, but it's all in fun, so.
Well, I have one last question. I just thought you might have a theme song of some kind. Like, do you have a song that you play in your head when you're walking down the street? Everybody has a theme song.
let's see, the Imperial March from Star Wars.
Dude.
You just gained even more fans. Okay. No, that's perfect. And on that note, thanks for being on Q Transmissions. And
it's been fun.
We'll see you at the event next week.
Very good. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Again, Dr. P.Z. Myers will be on the university campus Monday, January 26th, to debate Kirk Dunstan from the University of Guelph about the existence of God. And you can check PZ's blog at scienceblog.com/pharyngula.
South America does not exist. Things sometimes fall up, but you never see, and everything you believe is a lie.
Dinosaurs were invented by God as a test. Our bodies don't rot when we die. All the hippies